Okay, let's start. So today we will learn how to build simple processors, and mostly we will focus on helping you to build the one which you will continue in your next lab. And today we will look into the basic components of this simple processor. So the first component that we want to know is registers. And registers are basically a storage. You can think about it as a storage, but it holds some value, but then the difference is it gets a value as input, and then it has the capability of holding that state and passing that value as output. And this update of the value happens at every clock cycle. So what is a clock cycle? Clock cycle is defined as the time period between these two leading edges. So this leading edge starts a clock cycle, or you could say that it ends the last clock cycle. And this is the time between the two leading edge where we will do some logic, or we will design some logic which will operate something. So based on what kind of instructions we want to do, we will have to do different things within that time. So that's the sequential processor we will study first, but then we will get to complex things later. So we want to emphasize that how the register value changes with clock cycle. So here we are showing the register input and output, and every different color represents different input and output. So you can see that even if we change the input before this leading edge, that does not change the output. So here the striped color changed to green, but until we get to the leading edge, this value didn't get transferred to output. Then again, within the clock cycle, we could change the input values as we want, but that will only get reflected when we have this leading edge of the clock. Any question here?
Yeah, can you talk about what a clock symbol is?
Okay, so okay, let's start with the high level. So when you buy a processor, it comes with some specification which says that what is the speed of the processor, what is the frequency. So basically it says that how often you will move to next state in your processor. So the ones that we will discuss today, they're each here, each instruction will happen with this period of time which we have defined as a cycle. So if I have three instructions, for example, add, move, and then another add, then here for the sequential processor, we will do the add instruction in the first cycle. Then after there is these leading edge, the states will get updated and we will move to the next cycle where we are supposed to process another instruction. So if we can process the instruction faster, that means that our clock is, the cycle is smaller and we can process main instruction fast. If the clock cycle is longer, that means that it takes a longer time to get to the next instruction. Any question? Yes.
I assume the little blind score on the register input are zeros and register input.
So here we didn't differentiate what is the value, just let's assume that whatever value it is, it's just different. So it could be 0, 0, 0 or 1, 1 or 1, 0. It just, they are, each color is representing different value. Any more question? Okay. So for Y86, we have some states which we would like to know in this class. And these states are stored in register or memory. The first thing we would like to know is the PC. So this is program counter, which says that where is your next instruction. It stores the memory location where we are supposed to fetch our instruction from. PC stands for program counter, but mostly we will call it PC. And you can see that there is this input and there is one output. We also have these flag registers, zero flag and sign flag, which basically operates the same way. When we have the leading edge of the clock cycle, the states will get updated. But we could change the input within the clock cycle, but it would just affect the state until we get to the leading edge. Then we have these memory, and you can see that there are actually two memories here. The first one, it's the instruction memory. So this is the place we keep all our instructions. So think about when you write your program, there is a bunch of instructions, and this is the place where these instructions will be stored. So here, the input is the address of the memory. So the input would be a memory location, and the output would be the value in that memory location, which in this case is our instruction. Any question? So the next thing is register file. What it is? So we saw that in our in x86 and also in y86, we have a number of registers that we use in our instruction. Specifically for y86, we have 16 of them, 0 to 15. So we store these registers in this register file. And the way we access we could input the number of the registers, so 0 to 15. And what will happen is we will get the, so that within the register file, it will look up that register number and output the content of that register. So if it says source A and B, which means that for this specific register file, we can input two register numbers and we could get two values as output. Then I guess we will also talk about it later, but we also have, if we want to write to a register, for that reason, we also have some inputs which will take the number of the register, But then when we have a clock cycle, the leading edge, at that time, that value would get written into, okay, so the value has to go there. So this would be the register number, and this would be the value that we want to write in that register. And if we have a clock cycle, then that value would get written into that register. And also we have data memory. So it is different from instruction memory. Data memory is where we are keeping our data. So for example, we had instruction which was moving data from memory to register. So this is the memory where we would keep that data and move to our register file. And you can see that it also has inputs and outputs, and we will look into it details a bit later. Any question here? Yes.
So with each like clock cycle, you can write to up to two registers?
So here, in this register file, yes. So you won't have to, okay, I guess related to your lab, you won't have to design all these basic components for your processor. This will be given to you. And we will specify what is the input and what is the output. So that something is a basic block which you will use to design your processor. So let's take a deeper look at the memories. So for instruction, the input is an address within that memory, and the output is data. So for instruction, it's kind of a read-only memory for now. So here, once we input some address, we get the output. So here we actually don't depend on the clock because we are not writing to it. But for the data memory, we can actually read from that memory and also write to it. So that's why when we want to write, what we have to do is we have to input the address. And also we have to input what data we want to write in memory. So that's where we have this input to write and address. And the value in memory would get updated with the leading edge of the clock. Yes?
So what does the blue arrow represent here? Does that mean the value is still not in the memory?
So the blue represents that suppose you have some memory in here, right? And they may have some content already there. The blue represents that. And
the green is the update.
The green is the new value that we are writing. So the value remains the same until we have this leading edge. Once we have given the address input, and we also input the data that we want to write with the leading edge, the value in memory gets updated. Yes?
So kind of like a wording question. In the book, if I remember correctly, they said the memory gets written when the clock is operated. Can we assume that for all these components, we're going to write on the leading edge and not other like time and during the clock cycle?
Yes, so we could, we could input the address and data within the clock cycle, but you will assume that the data gets updated only with the leading edge of the clock cycle. So why is that? So sometimes we will use the memory to both read and write within a cycle. So there are instructions, right? I guess we don't have instructions.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, we don't do that. But I guess at the in general, the reason that things happen at the leading edge of or the falling edge of the clock cycle because sometimes in real processor we read and write the memory within the same cycle, and when we are reading something, we don't want to simultaneously write it, so there is no chance of corruption. But here, to make things simple, y86 actually don't have any operation like that.
Should we
mention
what write and read will do?
Yes. So, whenever you want to read or write your memory, you have these extra inputs which says that do you want to enable the memory to do that operation. So here we have two wares which says if it's enabled for read or write. So for example here, if we want to say that I want to read the memory, we input the value of the, we input the address, and then we have to insert the read enable signal, and then the output will come here in the data output. Similarly for writes, we want to make sure that this write enable signal is inserted before we write something. So why do we do that? One reason is when we will design our processor, there would be times that there are some signals here that will come from other places. You will see later. For maybe some other instructions that we have designed. But it's not that we want to read or write memory all the time. So by having this enable signal, we make sure that even if there are some values in the input, they don't affect the memory. Any question? So the next thing is register file. So here, this is the register file which contains the registers that we have in our processor. So for example, RAX, RDX, and for Y86, we have 15 of them. And I guess one extra, but we will talk about it later. So here, the input. First input that we could have is the number of register. So if we provide that number, we will actually, what will happen is there is some logic within the register file which will read that value from that register and then output it in this pin. So for this register file, we have two inputs which takes register number, and that's why we have two outputs which will give us the values in those registers. And you can see that it doesn't depend on clock. So as soon as we change the input in the register number, there would be some time delay because it will actually read data from the register file, but then we will get that value from the register. For the write, we have to give two inputs. We have to provide the number of the register, and also we have to provide what value we want to write in that register. And this one depends on the clock cycle. So after we provide these inputs, it doesn't immediately change the value in the register. So we have to wait till the leading edge of the cycle. And only after that, that values will get written into the register. Any question? Yes.
So registers up
update on the rising clock cycle, but registered files don't depend on the clock cycle. If so, like, what's the difference between a register and a registered file?
So fundamentally, it's not that different. So when I say registers, which is more like PC and zero flags, they also have the, do we show that? Okay. So they also have the same property that when we try to update them, we can provide the input here, but they will get updated only with the leading edge of the clock cycle. And the register file is just a bunch of registers at the within a basic block, and they have the same property. So if we want to read them, as soon as we provide the inputs, the number of the register, we will get the value out of it. And if we want to update some specific register within the register file, then we actually have to provide the number of the register, the value of that we want to update, and then with the leading edge, that value would get updated in the register. Any question? Yes.
Just to clarify, the register file can take in two inputs for the read and write data?
Yes. Yes. So here, the register file that we will use, it can take two inputs for reading the value of the register. Also, it can get two inputs when we are writing a value in some specific register. Yes?
So reading the value of a register doesn't depend on the clock cycle?
No. Any more question? So we have a specific case for Y86 where we have defined that 15 is a specific value which says that if the write register number is 15, then write would be ignored. And while we are reading, if the value is 15, the output value here would be always zero. So this is just a design choice that the authors of the book made, and since we will follow the book, this is the special case that we will follow. So it just means that if we input value 15, basically we are saying that the register file don't do any operation. If we are reading, there would be a zero in the output. If we are writing a register, the register file won't do anything. No question? Okay. So the next component is called arithmetic logic unit. If you remember the Y86 instruction set, we had four logical and arithmetic instructions: add, subtract, XOR, and AND. And this is the ALU that we will use for performing these operations. And it takes two inputs, A and B, and the output will depend on what kind of operation we select. So here you can see that there is a where called operation select. So based on the value of this input, it would perform either add or sub or XOR or AND. Any question? Okay. So now that we have seen the basic components, let's try to design how the the processor would look if we have only one instruction in our instruction set architecture. So we will just take one instruction from Y86, which is the add Q, and then there are two registers. This is the source, this is the destination. Like we add both of them and put it in our YY. And we want to design the sequential processor for only this one instruction. So the processor, what it can do is it can execute a bunch of add instructions, and that's it. So because there is no other instruction, we will just assume that there is no opcode. And the only thing we need to tell the processor is the number of two registers. So it will take just one byte to decode each instruction. There is no opcode. So these are the components that we will use. You can see that there is no memory because that instruction here, it doesn't operate on memory. It just operates on two registers. So what is the first thing we need to know? We need to know that what are the registers that this add instruction is operating from. But in order to know that, we actually have to get that instruction from memory. So for example, think that you have three add instructions in this instruction memory, and you want to execute them one by one. So first thing we want to say that take the content from the program counter, and this tells us where within the memory we want to look for the instruction. And within somewhere in the instruction memory, we have this one byte of value which contains two register numbers. So instruction memory, remember that if we provide it as an address, what it will output is the value of that location. So instruction memory would read these two values of register, which is taking one byte in this case. And now, from these 8 bits, we have to decode it such a way that we know what are the registers. So there is this split operation, which will take one byte, and then it will take the upper 4 bits for the first operand, and the lower 4 bits as the second operand. And it will transfer them to our register file. So these are two register numbers. And for the register file, the register numbers goes to the input here. Any question here? So what we have learned about the register file, once they get some register number, they internally, they read the content of those registers and output them here. So here, source A and source B are just the names of the names we are using for the number of registers, and R source A and R source B just indicate the value of those registers. So we will get those values once we provide the number of the registers in the output. And now we need to add those values. So here we will need an ALU which performs the add, but because we just have one instruction, it just only performs add. So as soon as we provide two inputs, the ALU would take those values and add them, and they will output them in this wire. But now remember that what the add instruction does. Add instruction takes the values of two registers and then writes it back to this next register. So what we have to do is after the add operation, now we have to take that output value and write it back to the register RYY. And for the write operation for in a register, we actually need two inputs, right? So first we need the value that we want to write, and that is coming from our ALU. And also we need to know what register we are writing to. And that will come from the instruction that we have read from instruction memory. So here when we are splitting, we will take the first four bits and we will connect a wire from this split operation to this destination. So destination E denotes what is the number of the register we want to write. And here the R destination E denotes what value we want to write to that register. And now we have set up all the wires, but remember that the values will get written when we actually get to the leading edge. Any question? Yes. So in the Y86 instruction set architecture, if you look at all the instructions, most of the time source B is the destination, but then there are some instructions which is a bit tricky, but we will get to that later. But in most cases, RB would be the destination. So that's why it's always good to have that table with the ISA, so you can always look at it and say what's going on. So do you think we are done, or do we need to do something more here? So think about the processor. It has a bunch of add instructions. And once we are done the first one, we want to get to the next one. Yes.
Is that the instruction?
The next one? Yes. So we actually have to make sure that the PC has the next instruction for the next cycle, right? So this is kind of motivating that we are not done with the instruction here. So for example, let's assume that we have two add instructions in our memory. The first one is at location 00, and the second one is at location 01. And initially, let's assume there are some values. And we want, for the first instruction, we want what we want to do is we want to take the value of RAX and RDX. So here, the value of RAX is 1, RDX is 3. So we want to add them and put them again in RDX. So after cycle 1, what we have done is we have provided the correct register number and the value after that operation, and once the we get to the leading edge of the clock cycle, RDX will get updated. It has our new value 4. But then we are supposed to get to the next instruction, but we haven't updated our program counter yet. So that's why what we have to do is we have to make sure that before the instruction, the cycle ends, we have the new PC for the next instruction. And because in our simple processor, where we only have these one add instruction, What we have to do is we have to increment the PC by the length of these add instructions. And if you remember, because there was no other instruction, there were no opcode, what we had was only one byte denoting the register numbers. So that's why what we have to do is we have to take the current value of the program counter, then add one, and connect it to the input of the PC. And remember that this is a register, right? So even if we have set it up everything, the input has the new PC plus one, it will get updated only when the cycle ends. So in the next cycle, the PC would have PC plus one, which will be able to get the next instruction from our memory. Any question here? Yes. Do we need an ALU to increment the PC? So that's a very good question. Yes. So yeah, we need some kind of logic which will increment the PC. And here by plus one, I have just encapsulated it. But we do need some kind of logic to increment it. Usually there are two different ALUs. One for doing the operations within the instruction, one for PC. But here we are just making things simple and saying that, okay, we have some logic which is incrementing the PC by one. Any more questions? Let me go through the instruction once again then. So, what happens is we take the value of the PC. This gives us the address of the instruction. So that address is taken as an input from the instruction memory. And we know that what the memory does is when it's given an address, it looks up that address and gets the content of the memory location. And it outputs it. So once we have the instruction, which is one byte and contains the value of two registers, we take that content and split it so that we know what are the register numbers. So we take the first four bits and connect it to the first source A. We take the second four bits and they again connect it to the second input of the register files. Now register file, it has some register numbers in its input, so it reads the content of those register file, the registers, and it outputs the content. The add unit takes those contents, so it has two values, right? It adds them out and produces the result. Next thing we need to do is we want to write that result in this register. So what we do is we take the output and put it here in our DestE, but we also provide what is the number of the register we want to write. That comes from the instruction itself. And after the clock cycle ends, that value gets written into the register. But at the same time, we also have to update the PC. So we take the current value of the PC, add one, and take it as an input to our PC register. So if you think about it, all these things are kind of happening in the parallel, but the updates, we have two updates, update to PC and update to register file, they happen at the end of the cycle. Any question? Okay. So now we have set it up to execute multiple add instruction. So now, after cycle one, not only RDX will get updated, RDX have the value of these RAX and RDX, which is 1 and 3. Our ALU took those values, summed it up, and returned it back to RDX. But at the same time, once the clock ends, we actually have the new value of the PC. So here, when the next cycle starts, we have the new PC from here, and that means that we could add the next instruction from our instruction memory. Any question? Okay. Oh, yeah. So the question is, should we assume that the read and write is always enabled? So for the PC, there we don't need, because the PC gets updated every instruction, we don't need any read or write enable. But for register files, we will actually see it later, I guess. So right now, let's just assume that it's always enabled. So now let's try to design another instruction, which is jump. So basically, the format is jump label, which means that take the address, which is which would be the label, and the PC should get updated to that address. And if you remember from our Y86 ISA, the labels are 8-byte, and we will use the same thing. So any address that we will input is 8 bytes. But here, for this simple processor, we are just assuming that the only thing it could do is it could jump to some other place. So that's why we don't have any opcode. So we will just deal with the label. And the length of the instruction is 8. So can you tell what should we do here? So the first part is kind of the same. We take the value of the PC, and that we will use as an input, as an address to our instruction memory, and that will read that memory location. And remember that the format is whatever we are reading, that's the location of the next PC, so that's where we want to jump. So that's why we could just simply take the output of the instruction memory and feed it to our PC. In that case, what will happen is in the next cycle, we will use that value that we have read from instruction memory as our next PC. This is I guess the simplest form we could think of. Any question? Okay. So this processor, the only thing it could do is it could jump to different place. So here we have 3 jump instruction, and the first one is located at address 0. The second one is located at address 8. The third one is located at address in hexadecimal 10. And the reason is each instruction here is taking 8 bytes. And what is the content of the jump instruction? It just says that jump to location 10, the second one says jump to location 00, and the third one says jump to location 08. So initially, the PC has the value 00. So what will happen is we will get that value from the PC, and the instruction memory, once it gets an address, what it does, it just reads the content of that location. So at 00, we will read the content, which is, again, our ISA says that the content will contain these 10. So here we will just take that content and feed it to our PC. So when this cycle ends, now the PC gets updated with 10. And then in the next instruction, in the next cycle, the instruction memory gets as input address 10. So it will look up that location and will find some content. And that content will get fed to the PC again, and we will start fetching data from that content. Any question here? Okay. So before we move to the next one, where we will try to combine multiple instructions within the processor, because our processor can't just do one instruction, it just doesn't make sense. So there is another basic component that we will use when we are trying to design a processor which executes multiple instructions. And it is called MUX. What it has is it has a bunch of inputs. So for this one, we have four inputs, A, B, C, D. And it transfers one of the input to the output. But what value would get transferred to the output, it depends on this select where, select input. So depending on what is the value of select, we could have A or B or C or D in the output. And you can think about it as a very simple truth table. So if we select 00 in the select bit, the output would be A. And if it's 1, we will have B in the output. If it's 2, C, and so on. So this is a simple way which gives us the capability to select one of the input and transfer it to the output, so that even if we have multiple things coming in, we can select the one which we want to use for some specific instruction we are trying to implement. Any question? Okay. So now what we want to do is we want to design a processor with two instructions. One is jump, and ISA says that it will have a label, which is the address, which is 8 bytes, and we have no op, basically it doesn't do anything. When we have no op, it just moves the PC to the next instruction. And because we have two instructions, now we need some kind of opcode to differentiate between which instruction we are executing right now. And here we are using the Y86 opcode. So if we have 70 in the first byte, it indicates that we have a jump instruction. And if we have 10 in the first byte, it indicates we have a NOP instruction. And now we want to see that how we could design a processor which can execute both of them. So if you remember the table that we had for the ISA, here it says that NOP starts with 1 and 0, the jump starts with 70 and then there are 8 bytes for the address. Any questions? Okay. So when we are, first thing we have to do is we have to read the instruction from memory. And that part is pretty simple. We take the current value of the PC, we feed it to our instruction memory, and it gives us the content in that location. And that content could be either jump or nop. And in order to decide what is the instruction, we actually have to take a look at what is the content in the first byte. So we take the opcode, which is the first, this 1 or 7 in that case, and we will decide that if the first 4 bit is 7, we have to jump. And if we find a 1 in the first 4 bits, then we actually have a no-op operation. So here we will have a circuit which will, based on this opcode, will decide if it's a jump instruction or not. And this is where we will use a mask to pass one of the inputs. So what could be the inputs to our PC? The input could be the destination, which is coming from the jump instruction. Or it could be PC plus 1, which is the next location or next PC if the instruction is not. So we have these two possible choice for two of these instructions, and we have to pass one of the values to update our PC for the next cycle. So that's why this mask is useful for us, because it will pass one of the values to the next to the PC depending on if the instruction is jump or not. So we have these some kind of logic which will decide if it's a jump instruction or not. And if it is a jump instruction, the mask select will input 1, and we will get this destination and pass it to the PC. If it's a no-op instruction, then we will take PC plus 1 and pass it to the PC. Any question here? So basically here I'm showing how the mask works. So you can think about it. It has a bunch of inputs, but only one of them will be transferred, will be connected to the output. So if we have 0 in the mask select input, that means that the PC plus 1 gets transferred to the output and it comes here to the PC. And if we have 1 in the mask select input, then the destination gets transferred and the destination gets here. And remember that once the cycle ends, that PC will get updated. Is it clear? Any confusion? Okay, let me just recap it once more. So we have two instructions. One is jump and one is nop. And the difference between these two instructions is, first, they have different opcodes, which will tell us what is the instruction that we are executing. And also, for nop, the next PC is PC plus 1. And for jump, the next PC is this value in the destination. So the difference is, first, we when we read the value of the instruction from the instruction memory, We have to look at the opcode to determine if it's a jump instruction or a nop instruction. If it's a jump instruction, we take the, we provide one in the mask select, and it selects the destination value, and we feed it to the PC. If it's a no-op instruction, we take PC plus one, and that is what. So here, then it gets to the PC. Any questions?
So after the mux, where can it find the destination? Where can we get the address of the destination?
So destination contains the the next address.
Mask.
Yes, yes. So this is the input to the mask. The mask can have different inputs. So here, two inputs we have is PC plus one, and the next PC, which is destination.
So for the knob operation, we just ignore the destination, right?
For knob instruction, we want, so what knob does is it doesn't do anything, right? It just moves the PC to the next instruction. So that's why for knob, we take PC, add it one, and for with the mask, we select it and feed it to the PC. For the jump instruction, we take the destination. We also have to select the appropriate logic, the mask select bit, which says that transfer destination to the output. And then the destination comes here, and at the next cycle, this becomes our next PC. Any more questions? Okay. So now let's assume we have two instructions, which is the add instruction, which we saw earlier, and we want to design a processor which can do add and nop. And you can start trying it by yourself, but also talk to your classmates and try to figure out which one of those is true. So we want to know that if we are designing a processor where we have two instructions, knob and add, where we would need mask. So we have, there are some places we have to select something for knob, and sometimes we want to select something for the add instruction. And what would be true? So how should we start? Remember that we already have these add instruction here. And this is the path we had designed for add. But we now want to add knob to it. And remember what it does, it just, it basically doesn't do anything. It just increments the PC so that it points to the next instruction. So what are the things we have to change? That will, that's the starting point. And then I want to know where do we need a mask? I guess the first thing you need to know is what is the instruction format. Because we have just two instructions, we will have to have some kind of opcode. And let's assume it's the same, which we used for NOP here, so it's 1-0. And for add instruction, we have some opcode, and then we are taking the number of two registers, the source, the two source, and then we write back to the second operator. Don't need a mask, or we definitely need a mask. Yes. Something I haven't made it clear. So how much we want to increment each instruction? It depends on the length of the instruction. And in the prior examples, both NOP and add had one byte, right? So that's why for those cases, you were right that we don't need to change the PC because both of them have the same value. But the problem is if we have two instructions, we actually need to have some kind of opcode to differentiate between these two instructions. So we actually have to have more than one byte at least for these add instructions. It will have some opcode then two register values. So here we actually need a mask to say that I guess we are kind of mixing these two. So
say add one or two.
Yeah. Any more answers? So, A, who thinks that we need a mask for A? Yes. Okay. So, actually, so it is true that for NOP we may not want to use any register, but for add, it will take the value of two register and add it. But usually we don't add a mask before the, at least in this case, because unless we take the output of the register file and do something about it, it's actually okay to read it all the time. So there is no conflict between these two instructions that NOP is reading register, some register, and then the add is reading some other kind of register. So there is no conflict here. NOP doesn't do anything. So as long as there is, we don't take the output and do something about it, it's fine to read it. It just, you can think about it, it's just, it's, we are wasting something. Then what about C, where we have, should we have one before register files, register number to write? Yes, so we want to make sure that nothing gets written into the register when we don't want to do anything. So that's why we would need a mask there. And do you remember the register files that we will use? If we have the value 15, it says that don't write. So that's why we will need a mask here. For NOP, we want to say that don't do anything. For add, we actually want to write some value back to the destination. Yes?
What if for like a, you put in a box before one of the reads, and you made it so it's now the read from our register 15, so it would be added to it, so what would you do?
So, suppose we have zeros, and then we will have zeros at the output, right? We have 15 in the input as the register number, and we will have zeros at the output. And that will maybe go to some ALU or something. But as long as we make sure that we don't write that value back from the ALU to our register file, we are okay.
Asking, can we instead write back the value we just read to implement it up? And the answer is yes.
Yes, we could.
Wouldn't probably. It could be harder, but we could.
We could write back the same value that we have read, but it's just we are doing some wasted work, and usually we. Okay, I guess this is a design choice you could make. If you want to make your design simpler, but maybe I guess this is not what we will do. Any more question? Okay. So whatever we have seen so far, if we want to summarize it. Like at the in this sequential processor that we will build in our assignments, each instruction is taking one cycle. And if you have read the book, each instruction is divided into stages, which we haven't actually talked about it, but we will. But that's more like because of design convenience. But we will use the stage when we design multi-cycle processor later. But for sequential, each processor takes one cycle, so even if we divide the different tasks within one instruction, basically they are still getting done in one cycle. And what happens within that cycle? We read values from our previous state, which has been updated in the prior cycle. Then we do some kind of logic to execute that instruction and send those values to appropriate components. We use masks to determine what value is sent to these components, and when the cycle ends, the values that we want to get updated, they are either written back to our register file or registers. So now let's try to build a processor where we have three instructions, but they all are different kind of move instructions. And here we are kind of using the same format for y86. So the first instruction is immediate to register move. So it takes a constant and moves that value to this register, RYY. Then we have register to register move. This is the source. The second one is destination. So it takes the value of this register and writes it back to the second one. And we have memory to register move. So here, we will take the value of the first register, then we will add the displacement, and that would be the address of the memory. We will take that address, read the value from memory from that location, and move that value to register RYY. So these are three instructions, three move instructions, and we want to build a processor similar that we have just before. So here, these are the format of the instruction, and this is similar to Y86 that we have seen before. So for RR move, register to register move, the opcode contains 20, and then we have two register numbers. For instruction to register move, the opcode contains 30, and because it has just one destination register, then it has this F, which if you remember, would say that don't do anything with that register. And then we have this value RB, the destination register number. And the next 8 bytes contain the immediate value. For memory to register move, the opcode contains 50 in the first byte. Then we have the 1 byte, which contains the location of two registers. And then we have 8 bytes for displacement. So we take the value of the next register, add it to the displacement, use it as the memory location. So we want to build a processor, and we want to start with the first instruction, which is register to register move. What should we do? So first thing is we take the PC, the current PC, feed it to the instruction memory and get the value of that instruction, right? And we have to split it because we could get either 20, 30, and 50, but if we see there is a 20 in the first byte, that means that this is a register to register move. So that's why we have the split logic here. And if we see that the first byte contains 20, it will mean that now we have to take the values of these RA and RB and send it to our register file. So that's why you can see that there are two wires which are getting to source A and source B. And because we have just used the RB and connected to the destination, but this is something we could have avoided. It's not necessary, but we are just keeping things consistent with when we will build the whole Y86 processor, we may do something like that. Any question? Yes.
You said that third arrow is destination.
Yes, I guess it's not LN, yes. So now what we want to do? So what this instruction does is it takes the value of register RA. So that's why when we put RA here in the input, the register file reads the content of that register and will output it. And this value, now we actually want to move it to RB. And that means that now we have to set up our register file with address and the new content. So here, the address, which the register that we want to write is our RB, which is coming from the split, and the value is coming from the output of the register. And I guess, but we actually have to, let's cover it in the next class. I guess I'm running out of time. Thank you.